Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is episode 51, 2020 Candidate Forum, Mary Burkett, Congressional District 2.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Color Country Politics. We are continuing our candidate series today. I'm Jenny Hendricks.
I'm Jesse Harris.
And we're still doing this Zoom thing. I hope you're liking it. It seems to be working out okay, and it's given us some great access to candidates. So I hope this is something that everyone is finding helpful. So we're really excited today. We have another second congressional district candidate with us today. Mary Burkett is here. Mary, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, we're sure excited to hear from you. So as we were just talking about, we've kind of got a list of questions and we're asking all of the candidates the same basic questions, just giving the candidates the opportunity to reach out to the voters here in Southern Utah and let everybody get familiar with them. So first of all, Mary, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I was born in the Eastern U.S. when my dad was in the Army. And when he retired, his dream had always been to live in California. So I grew up in California. When he retired from the Army, we went there. And as an adult, I've lived most of my adult years here in Utah. Lived in Salt Lake, and then my husband and I moved down here to Washington County about 15, 16 years ago. Love Washington County. Cannot imagine living anywhere else. Just cannot imagine it. We love it here. I got involved in politics about 10, 12 years ago. And it was based on, I had an epiphany while washing dishes, getting dishes ready to go in the dishwasher, right? Jenny, you can relate to that. That's when we do some of our thinking, right?
Exactly, and, yep.
Those mindless chores is where we kind of lose ourselves. And so my husband was in, it was a great room. You know, the kitchen, dining, family room were kind of together in that home. And I heard someone on the news say something about the Constitution that I knew was incorrect. So I stopped what I was doing, went in the other room, grabbed our copy of the Constitution, and I wish I could remember which amendment it was, but I read it and I go, wait a minute. If I heard this today, what other things have I heard on TV about the Constitution that were incorrect and I missed it? So the next day I was in the library, I brought home 10 books. I brought home everything by Skousen, Bastiat, Hayek, every founding father biography I could find, and I dug in for about 2 weeks solid. That's all I did besides work. Just, I had to find out. And I decided at that point I'd get involved in the Republican Party. So I have been a precinct chair. I was the vice chair of the Washington County Republican Party. I've served on the state central committee 3 different times. I've just been involved for quite a while, never dreaming until about 4 years ago that I'd ever run for Congress. And I'm running for 3 reasons. Number one, the incumbent's been there almost 8 years, and the debt's gone up $8 trillion during his tenure. Second reason is when you have as much debt as we have right now, and we really don't know what the debt's going to be once we get through all the COVID stuff, I will not be surprised if we're at $30 trillion in debt. And that tells me that nobody in Washington, D.C. thinks about future generations. Future generations deserve a voice. They need a voice. I'm going to be their voice. And the third reason is I'm so tired of excuses. We're Americans. We get things done. We are the movers, shakers, the innovators, the inventors of this world. We should have members of Congress who are all over creative problem solving like crazy. And it doesn't matter what party you belong to. When you're in Congress, you're serving your constituents. And as an American, you need to be out in front and solving problems instead of complaining like, oh, you know, the Democrats are in charge or we can't do this because of that. Fix it. Make it happen. And that's another reason why I'm running. I do get stuff done. I was a single mom. I had 6 children, no money, no marketable skills. 3 years later, I still had 6 children and no money. But I had marketable skills in the form of a bachelor's degree, and I turned my life inside out, and I worked my way out of poverty. And there were naysayers. There are always naysayers. It doesn't matter what you do in life. And, you know, they'd say things like, oh, that's a crazy idea. You can't possibly succeed. And there were always those people, oh, that's a good idea, but I just don't know. you know. But I proved him wrong, and I'll prove him wrong again. And that's the attitude we need in Washington, D.C.
I've heard the primary difference between genius and crazy is success. So there you go.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm going to write that down, Jesse. I hadn't heard that before, but it is apropos in more than one situation, I think.
It certainly is.
So, I agree.
I always say that you do have to be at least a little bit crazy to decide to run for office because you're really putting yourself out there. What finally lit the fire for you?
Just learning the incumbent's voting record. That was really the big thing. Noticing how he votes. He will vote against an omnibus bill when it's close to election time. But last year he voted 3 times to raise the debt ceiling. And in July of last year, it was $2 trillion. And 132 other Republicans voted against it. I want to be number 133. And I will be that person in the Republican caucus when the leadership says, we're all going to vote this way. If I don't feel good about that, if I don't think it's right, I'll be the one saying, I can't do that. I can't. And this is why.
That's great, Mary. Thank you. I appreciate your passion and your history and your story. That was really nice. So tell us, why are you running for this office?
Because Congress controls the money. The president can propose a budget, but the final decisions are made by Congress. And that's why. That's where the money decisions are made, and that's where we need more long-term thinking. And I have 30 grandchildren. I don't want them to inherit all this debt and continue the bad spending habits that we have. And it won't be pretty. It's going to be hard. But much better to go through something hard now than, you know, 10, 20 years down the road when it's going to be even worse. And our grandchildren are paying taxes.
That's, yeah, very, very true. So kind of take us through a few of the things that you hope to get accomplished if you are.
Sure. Number one, obviously, reduce the debt. Now, you know, economists say we should never be more than 47% of our GDP in debt. We're over 100% now. So we've got to look at that. And there are a lot of things to cut. And I think one of the things I want to accomplish is to first educate the American people, because they're not getting the information in high school like they did when I was going to school, to understand exactly how the federal government works and what a bad habit it is to be a victim. There's a great book by a man named Jason Riley. He's black. He grew up poor. And it's called Please Stop Helping Us. And in his book, he talks about all the ways that the perceived help has destroyed the black family in this country. I think people, lower income people, are being taught to be a victim, expect others to fix your problem. You're so much better off if you take whatever little bit of help you need. I was on welfare for 4 months when I first got divorced. 4 months. And I remember like it was yesterday, the day, and this was before you could do everything on your computer. The day I went into the welfare office to let them know I was okay. I want to stop this. I don't need it anymore. The man working there spent 20 minutes trying to talk me into staying on welfare. No, I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't need it. And finally, out of frustration, he gave me the documents to sign. I signed them and I was out of there. We were poor, but nobody ever went. Well, I went hungry a couple of times, but my children never went hungry. They had shoes on their feet. They had clothes on their back. They had what they needed. They went to school. They've all turned out great. And so I want to be an inspiration as well as educate people. You don't have to be a victim in this country. And you shouldn't be a victim because you limit yourself when you do that. So that's one thing I want to do. I want to show people. And then the second thing is I want to start cutting funding. It's ridiculous the things we pay for. Like, the federal government owns 77,000 empty or underutilized buildings all over the country. Jason Chaffetz tried to get a bill passed mandating the federal government sell those. It didn't work out because there was a Soros-funded group that came out. They lied about Jason. They lied about the bill. It was horrible, horrible. So he pulled the bill, and it's never been introduced again. We've got to reintroduce that. We've got to get rid of that. I want to, long-term, shut down the Federal Department of Education. It's too expensive, and the federal government has no business telling us how to educate our kids. And they do it with blackmail. They say, we'll give you these $4 million and you're going to love it. And no, we've got to stop. Utah knows how to educate their kids. Environmental Protection Agency. And a lot of people are going to get their, you know, get really angry when they hear that. States can do a better job. We all love the environment. And I always find it really interesting when a liberal says, well, you conservatives, right? We're a monolith. We're all lumped in together. You conservatives, all you care about is making money, and you just want the land so you can make more money. And when I explain to them, hey, wait a minute, why do you think conservatives live in Utah? We love it here. We love the scenery. We love the hiking. We love all the outdoor recreation. Why would we mess that up? It makes no sense. So I want to get some of the land back. That's going to take a little time. I think we've already lost the battle for hearts and minds of people on that. But I've got a good idea that I think we can implement to make that happen. Let's see. Nonprofit groups. The federal government gives money to nonprofits like Planned Parenthood, Special Olympics. And I want to say up front, I have a severely autistic grandson who will probably be involved in Special Olympics at some point. But I don't want the federal government supporting a nonprofit, particularly one where we know that there are so many great nonprofits out there providing services to families and to people with special needs, families with a special needs child. If you're going to give to one, you need to give to all of them. And both Planned Parenthood and Special Olympics, on their own, they raise $550 million every year, just corporate sponsorships and individual donations. They don't need federal money. So we need to get out of that business, so to speak. Let's see. Some of the other things, those are the top things. Oh, we need to privatize the post office and Amtrak. We have to. We're at the point where I think we need to show the American people we don't have choices anymore. Our financial situation is so bad that we've limited our choices. I want to turn the illegal immigration discussion upside down and talk about legal immigration. Let's finish the wall and reform legal immigration. Once we do that, illegal immigration will be a thing of the past. Yes, we are always going to have people come to this country illegal. It's always going to happen. We have to accept a small percentage that that's going to happen. But if we reform legal immigration, we'll have laws in place to take care of that too. So those are kind of the biggies that I want to tackle right off the bat.
Well, that sounds like a chunk of work.
Yes, it is. But that's what you do. You know?
No, I appreciate the sort of bootstrap approach. I think that resonates well, especially in southern Utah and the more rural parts.
Right.
Second congressional district, people are sort of used to that. They're sort of used to being more self-sufficient. And so I think that will resonate well.
And there is a portion of this district in Salt Lake and South Davis County. And it's such a shame. I don't get to go out and knock on delegate doors anymore. But when I was in Salt Lake County, people came out on their porch or they'd invite me in their home and they liked what they heard because they have been thinking the same thing. And finally, there's somebody out there saying what they're thinking.
Right. That's great. Now, I think that's an interesting thing about this district is it's a lot of rural, but then it does have, you know, just kind of a sliver of little urban in it.
Right.
That's something that is kind of unique and maybe a little bit difficult to balance because, you know, urban sometimes are in direct opposition to rural needs.
Right.
And something that, you know, we work through and do the best that we can. Well, let me ask you this, Mary. Is there anything in your opinion that Congress is doing well?
No. I think Republicans in Congress are doing a really good job of working with the president. They are trying, and I think that relationship is really good. It's just nobody in Congress has the guts to say to President Trump, we have to stop spending. We can't keep spending. My bill that I want to present, actually, it'll be a revamp of Jason Chaffetz's bill to sell those buildings. Jason didn't have a successful real estate developer in the White House to help him. We have that, and I'm sure he will help me get that bill passed and implemented. I think Congress has just gotten, and we all say it, we all think it, you know, they go to Washington and then they worry about getting reelected in 2 years. And it becomes more about them than their constituents. And I love the Gordon B. Hinckley quote that he used to say when he was far away from home, he was in England, felt like he wasn't doing a very good job, wrote to his dad and said, I might as well come home. I'm not being very successful. And his father's answer was six words, forget yourself and go to work. Mm-hmm. That's going to be my motto in Washington, D.C. That's what it's been the last year as I've been out campaigning. And I'm going to take that to D.C. with me because it isn't about me. It's about us, about our district.
That's great. Tell us, in your opinion, what should be improved, not just Congress as a whole, but what you would be able to control as a representative.
Well, because, you know, my first year there, it's going to be tough, but I've already started making some connections and relationships in Washington, D.C. with like-minded people. And so I'll be part of a group that gets a lot of this stuff done. And I think a lot of times the partisanship is so severe that we've got to quit allowing that to happen. Now, there are some Democrats that it doesn't matter what you do, what you say, they don't want to work with you. I get it. But there are those others who may very well. Don't just assume that they won't. Sit down and talk to them. There's a great story in a new book about President Trump, and I forget the author's name. I apologize. But I read some excerpts, and one of the excerpts was the first time Donald Trump sat down with Barack Obama, and he said to Obama, you know, what's the hardest problem right now? And President Obama said, North Korea. And President Trump said, so have you talked to him? And Obama was like, no, he's a dictator. What? Start talking to these people. Ask them their opinion. Find out where they're coming from. And then decide if you have common ground or not. A few months ago, I had a guy call me, and his tone of voice, he was out for bear, right? Loaded for bear. He was going to make me look stupid, and he had all his evidence. He had taken exception to the fact that I said on Facebook that our rights come from God. And he just was going to let me have it. Well, I listened. And by the end of the conversation, we had covered 5 different topics. We agreed on 2. And he was very effusive in his gratitude for my taking this call. Mm-hmm. And all it took was listening. Mm-hmm. That's it. And a little reflective listening. So he knew I understood what he was saying. And I think we have to do more of that in Congress.
Well, I've heard it said that you can't fight what you don't understand, too.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yep. And sometimes it is personal. Sometimes people, you know, they have had bad experiences and they go to Congress. There's a woman, I don't think she's in Congress anymore, Carolyn Mulroney, I think, or Murphy. She's from New York. Her husband and son were killed on a subway. She got elected to Congress for her anti-gun stances. Of course, she was in New York City. And that was her purpose for being in Congress. I think that it's not wise to go to Congress with a chip on your shoulder or a personal mission. I think you have to go there. My personal mission is let's get funding under control, spending under control. But it's not based on any, you know, bad experience I've had. It's just logical. Let's just do this.
Right. So, Jesse, do you want to jump in with your question?
Yeah. A question to kind of wrap it up. If you're stuck in an elevator for 30 seconds with a voter, what's your pitch to them of why they should pick you?
It's time to quit spending like a drunken sailor. No offense to drunken sailor. It's time to stop spending like that. And the average voter in that elevator, they know that resonates. They know because that's how they live their lives. That's what I'm going to pitch them. And I'm going to pitch them my personal story. Because I do know how to say no, and I do know how to disagree without being disagreeable.
That's great, Mary. So before we wrap it up, just tell us anything else that you would like voters to know about you, and give us your how voters can find more information. What's your website, Facebook page, all that kind of stuff. So anything else that you want to communicate to the people of Southern Utah?
Sure. I want the delegates especially to understand that we're using ranked choice voting this year. It's very unusual. Everything's different this year at convention. And these folks are experienced delegates. But many of them have not experienced ranked choice voting ever. So I'm going to ask them to make me their number one choice. Because I get enough number one votes, I don't have to worry about 2, 3, and 4. There are 4 people running in this race. And I would like their support. Something else they need to know is that I am going to communicate with them. Every day, Monday through Friday, I will be calling at least 2 delegates and voters to just check in. How am I doing? What needs to be different? What are you reading? And hopefully I will create that very direct relationship with people who are in my district so that they know they can come to me. It's kind of the Ronald Reagan, Donald Trump circumvent the media relationship model that I'm going to be following. And then on Fridays, every Friday, there will be an email newsletter that goes out. These are the people I've worked with this week. These are the meetings I've attended. This is what I've accomplished. This is what I'm on the road to do. This is how you can help. So we can be a partnership. I want to be in partnership with my constituents. And my website is Burkett, B-U-R-K-E-T-T, the number 4, Utah.com.
Excellent. I went to your website and it does have a lot of the things that we've talked about today on it. Yep. So it's a great resource for anyone that wants to find out more about Mary Burkett. Thank you
and
so
much. My phone number is there too. My phone
okay,
number
perfect.
Is my personal phone. Yep.
Okay. So if anybody wants to call and yell at you, they can.
Yeah, they can. Just be forewarned, I'm very unlikely going to yell back. So.
Okay. All right. That's great to hear. Well, listen, Mary, we're so grateful that you had time to come on and talk to us and educate our local people about, you know, who you are and what you're about and what your motivations are. We're really grateful for your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. This is great. I love it.
Very good. You come back anytime. Hey, great, everybody.
Thanks.
This is Jenny Hendricks along with Jesse Harris. And this has been our latest episode on the Zoom technology of Color Country Politics. We're glad you're here and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.